that all of Kislev marks the Shloshim. Of an individual, as we all know, a yochid, very special and very unique. Lesson Svi, the Prince Achim Brocha, the Rosh Hashiva, the Mir Yeshiva. There's Nifter, suddenly, Yidal of Cheshvin, where the hearts of people, the cries, thousands and hundreds of thousands of people perhaps did not know him, but they heard about him, or heard and felt Yerushalayim. I think this evening it's not enough to say over mices of this unique individual, mices that we have experienced, people that will address us, mice that we heard, mice that we read about. And more than that, we need chizuk. Arba dvorim tzrichim chizuk. Rashi says tamid, and the Rosh Hashiva lived this way. Tamid, tamid Torah, tefillah, gemilas chesed, derech eretz. Tamid. The Rosh Hashiva is compared to a nor in kodesh. Machlik is the Gemara Megillah, if you can sell a base Hamedrish for base Achnesis. To make a base Hamedrish, which is Kula Torah, the Kol Torah, and make it into a synagogue. A young Israel where mainly is just the davening, where there's Sidurim, Chumashim. So Pashas Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam, definitely not. Mahar Ba'Kodesh Ve'Marit. One man Domer says you can. The Rav is Masbir, based on the Gemara Megillah. Tefillah requires a mokum. Tefillah requires a mokum. The Shmuel Arena about Tefillah. Mokum Tefillah. This is my mokum yukah for years to daven in this mokum. This helps my kavonim. It takes down my gaiva. But when it comes to Talmud Torah, the Oren and the Mishkan was a space of 10 amas on one side, 10 on the other side, and from one wall to the next was 20 amas. So it was in the Oren. Oren was 2.5, 1.5. The Neis Hayomi had no mokum. The Oren had no mokum. It had a mokum. No, the Neis Hayomi. That's Talmud Torah. Sure, we speak about mokum Torah. It helps our learning. And if you're not in mokum Torah, if you're in Times Square, one would advise you don't have mincha there. In the subway, you don't have mincha. Over machshavas, thinking and learning, b'chol mokum. The Rosh Hashiva didn't have a mokum. He wasn't just the Rosh Hashiva of the Mir Yeshiva, only, specifically and only. And let him worry and let him be concerned only about his yeshiva and to finance his yeshiva. He went to Baltimore, he went to Lakewood, and told the Rosh Hashiva, and so spoke publicly. The Bachur should learn 12 hours a day. And he gave an incentive to this. An incentive. To be compensated a certain amount of money. You're not the Rosh Yeshiva. And Bachur today in Baltimore, this is last year, I'm not talking about years ago, are makabel upon themselves after his drasha. In the lake when he went to the Rosh Yeshivas, he said, you learned so little here. Allow me to give a bechina. You're a Rosh Hashiva in the Mir Yeshiva, not in Lakewood. Allow me to give bechinas for a certain amount of blot and a certain amount of time. And we're Musk. Oren, Einam in a Mira. Einam in a Mokum. He was an Oren Kodesh. He wasn't Miuchatz for one Mokum. Should be a chizik for us. To understand this idea, I heard myself, Rosh Yeshiva, once or twice a year, spoke in Shal Shiras. I happened to be there about 6, 7, 8 years ago. He spoke Shal Shiras, And they knew when he speaks Shalashiris, Chidushim, Chidushim, Nutakonis Nishim. That was his Chidushim. And one of his Chidushim was the fact that all the Bachrim should makab upon themselves to learn Torah, not just Seder time, 9:30 to 5, wherever it may be, but Bein Hasdorim, before Tefillah, the Erev Shabbos, the Masori Shabbos. So therefore, he instituted, and they did it. The whole yeshiva, thousands of Talmidim, the whole group, and he included himself, to start 6 to 6:30 in the morning, an hour before davening, for a week and a half, this group learns. Then another group comes for a whole month. Each group had their week or 10 days. And he was part of that. A chizuk. Torah, there's no mokum. He was a sefer Torah. They criticized him for a lot of things. How in the world can you take money that Barabatim give to the Mir Yeshiva and go ahead and buy or rent or a building that you know yourself is overpriced? Overpriced. They're charging more than you should. How can you take money from a yeshiva and pay that price? And his answer was, if one, and surely there'll be more than one, Bachar will be in this base medrash, and from this base medrash, he'll vaksois to be a omu batorah. He'll become a real ben Torah. It's worth it. It's worth the price. There's no such a certain price for Torah. He's above mokum. This is something we should take with ourselves. The Rosh Hashiva had unbelievable kechas ha-nefesh. As you all know, and it says in the Sedra by Yaakov Avinu, the eagle goes to heaven, Yapia Bear. Yaakov Avinu, so many years in Yeshiva Shem Behavior, all these men couldn't take out the rock from the top of the boar. Yet he could, like a cock, Gabi Sluchas. There's no problem. Why? Because there's a rutz, a gewaltig rutz. A bacher came to him. It was many times my own children said they learned with him. He was lying in bed. The last time I saw him, I got a shock. He went for over 15, 16 years to all the shurim that he gave after Yaakov Moshe Shir before Mincha. This is after Mincha, Erev Shabbos. The last time I saw him, I came into the room, he was in bed already, lying down, and he got up. A little shock. And he was lying in bed. This brother comes to him and says, I can't learn. It's not for me. It's too hard. I cannot learn. I can't do it. Demand too much from me. I can't do it. So he said, I can't get out of bed. I can't get out of bed. And with all his koichas ha-nefesh, he got out of bed. That bocher is a changed bocher today. A different bocher. I also can't do it. I can't do it. How many times he couldn't speak? How many times he couldn't walk? So Ashir, after he gave Ashir clothing in the base finish, they had to drag him out. Physically drag him out. I can't! You look at Yaakov Avinu. No? Yaakov Avinu couldn't do it. He can't! The soul libo. This kwechas ha-nefesh that he showed. I can't learn, but I can learn. The Mishnah says in Satan, that Mem Zayin Aleph, the Mishnah mentions that after the Petira of Yosef ben Yoezer Ish Seder, Yosef ben Yehuda Ish Yishlaim, Botlu Ashkolus. What does Ashkolos mean? Mor explains it, and Rashi explains it. Shakol bohem, ad yemem, ohoyu machoikis b'chach mi'yisur. Kulam ha'yomim dvorim kinsinasim. Torah is clear. No machlokes. Clear. Crystal clear. Yediyas ha'Torah is crystal clear. So this goes on in Yediyas ha'Torah. If you look in the Perish Mishnayos of the Rambam, Rambam mentions something else. Besides this concept of Yediyas ha'Torah, the Rambam mentions also the union of Midas Tevis. But also, Ashkolis is not only Chochmas ha'Torah, but Midas. It was said by one great Mashgiach that the Rosh Hashiva was an Ish Ashkolis. It was not only a person, a Melech Shebetorah, but also Midas Tevis. Now, it's a Brias and love for people. What does that mean? How did he show his Ava? When an American boy came to Mir Yeshiva, and he came to Rosh Hashiva and told him, he's scared. He's not so committed, and the Mir Yeshiva did fantastic for that year. He has to go home. He does not know if he'll ever come back to Yeshiva. It's not a question of going back to Mir Yeshiva. It means he will not be on that madriga that he is right now, being in the Mir Yeshiva. He had that suffix. And the Rosh Hashiva gave him a bracha, he'll be matzliach, he'll come back. And then he couldn't speak to him too loud, and he asked him to please put his ear near his mouth. And he said to him, I'm waiting for you. I'm waiting for you. Those few words made the bracha, gave the bracha chizuk. One of our sons called the Rosh Hashiva Chalom Moed Sukkos from Detroit. And all he answered was, I miss you. I love you. I miss you. I miss your duchni. When an enikol came to the Rosh Hashiva, a six-year-old boy with my son, and Rosh Hashiva said, you're a kohen, give me a bracha. This wasn't put on. This wasn't put on. Those few little words, I miss you, give me a bracha. Thank you. Those little words, that's from the heart. Ish Ashkolis. This was a bracha. The idea of the Avos Chesed that was displayed by the Rosh Hashiva, he himself said he learned from his grandfather. His grandfather was the Mashgiach of Shmuel Finkel in Hebron, in Sabotka. And when Moshe Mordechai was Nifter, the day of the Levaya, right after the Kivura, immediately after the Kivura, the Mashgiach, his grandfather, said, that night there was a chasana of one of the Talmidim. No one would go to the chasana. After the great Rosh Hashiva was Nifter, no one's going to go to the chasana. You understand why? How can you go to the chasana? He said, right there, everyone go to the chasana. Hagashit. Hagashit's feeling. The way the Rav said on himself. The Rav, not on himself. The Rav, I think, when he first gave a drasha here in New York, Tagus Rabbanim, the Tilpo, the Briska, the Torah, and the Rav Chaim. Then at the end, he mentioned it was Erev Shabbos. It was Erev Shabbos. And Almana was Nifteris in Brisk. Just a plain woman, simple woman. And afterwards, another Megorah was Nifter. The Shala was, who should have Levaya first? So one would think, the other Megorah will take a long time. Her Levaya will take a few minutes. So that's what you should do. Rav Chaim said, no. Astana is Almana. The Amona comes first. So this is the words of the Rav. That Maisa that I'm telling you is Vert Meir, the Ganze Chedushi Rav Chaim on the Rambam. That Maisa that I'm telling you is Vert Meir, it's more worth. That's Rav Chaim. That's Musar. That's not Rav Chaim. That's Rav Chaim. wasn't just a Rosh Yeshiva that was Mamitz Torah, a big yeshiva, had raised so many millions of dollars. No one in the world raised so many million dollars. That's what remembered for that. We remembered Yish Chesed. This relates to us. And of course, when time was in Mir Yeshiva, they finished after Mincha during the week, and the Rosh Yeshiva happened to be an American and came back from America, and a boy came over to me and said, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva brought a present for all the Talmidim? I'm naive. Yes, what did he bring? A Rosh Yeshiva brings a present for all Talmidim? What did he bring? He answered, he brought a smile. Rav Volpe said that an animal can do everything a human being can do. I mean, he can jump, he can dance, he can laugh, even intelligent sounds, eat, sleep, but cannot smile. Smile comes from the nefesh that an animal doesn't have. A Rosh Yeshiva, a Rebbe is giving a shir, any Rebbe. He's learning Yevamos and Yezika, Inzika, learning a very difficult sugya, and he's smiling. Rabbi, why are you smiling? What's so amusing? What's so amusing? He's giving a whole chabur and he's smiling through the whole chabur. We hardly understand what you're saying. Why are you smiling? I can't help it. It's my nefesh. Is bowed. My nefesh is here. This is Rosh Hashanah. His nefesh. You heard this so many times. He smiles. We have difficulty in that. We need chizik. We don't smile. Many brought from here. They don't smile. And some say, I can't. I need to practice. I'll go to a therapist. I don't know how to smile. Because there's no hakasha. There's no hakashas. To know this is part of the Torah, this is part of Avos HaTorah, this is Avos HaBrias. To smile, it's a nefesh. This was the midas of the Rosh Hashanah. Ish Eshkolos. He had not only Tehillim and Torah, but he had the Koichas HaNefesh of Avos HaTorah, of Asmoda, Avos HaTorah, and Avos HaBrias, and Asiyas Chesed. Two more points, and one point is, how come? How come this man had such great milas that all the Rosh Hashivas respected him? All, not Rubo Kakulo, Komamish. What did he have? What was that special spark that he had that was blessed with, that he should machazik us with? So Rashgiach, Rav Matasyo Solomon wanted to say, the kin of a sin of a taiva matzim and a sodom and noilam. Many things were Makana. A Makana X and Y and Z. A Makana him. He's so bright. He's so smart. He's so good. He's such a tzaddik. He's such a zoris. No one was Makana of Nosson Zvi Finkel. No one was envious of him. His isur, to go to a chasen and be Masada Kedushin and spill all the wine out, and perhaps even on the kala's dress. No one was Makana him. No one is Makanahim, his Isurim. No one wished it on himself. He was free from any kinri, any type. This made him what he was. This didn't, his Ein Horas didn't affect him at all. He was able to work on these midas. I'd like to close by saying, as we start off, it's not enough for us to recall and to mention Mises of the Rosh Hashiva, which you'll hear. It's not enough. We need Chizuk to take what he lived for, Chizuk HaTorah, Asmada B'Torah, wherever he was, to pay to learn Torah, which he learned from Blazer Yehuda, from his uncle. It's not enough. a man that before the vayu, you all know, before the vayu was postponed a half hour. So, Nafta said, why was it postponed? Because the Rebbetzin learned this from her father. It wasn't her idea, but she implemented that. It was her idea. That there's be no alavaya until everyone signed and everyone agreed who the next Rosh Hashiva will be. Lazy Yehuda, the oldest son of Rav Nosson Tzvi. Everyone agrees there. And the last achdus they had was of a family was Sukkos, Chamoid Sukkos. He spoke about achdus in the Mishpach. Achdus in the Mishpach. That's Shekha Hain, Chevel Ayofi, Yish Hashem, Yish Hashem, Yish Hashem, Yish Yeshua, but the door of Yehuda Bar Loi, that door, this is the word of Chaim Shmulevitz, where I heard from Rosh Hashiva a few times, and that is that five or six people can learn under one talus. How can that be? Impossible. I want the talus. I want the blanket. I want the blanket. It's when everyone wants to give the other. Give the other. The importance of achdus. The importance of achdus, which exists in the Mir Yeshiva, and should exist in every yeshiva. Achdus, one respecting the other. And hopefully, that the patira of the Rosh Yeshiva should mechazik our yeshiva. Mechazik our yeshiva, that hopefully we'll be able, in the next short time, to have zmanim of chizuk, that perhaps, just a suggestion, that the lunch hour should be 12:05, not 12 o'clock. That the maariv should be a little later. That the learning at night a little later, for a week or two. The more brachim, one day, 2 days, no davening in any other beis medrash, but our beis medrash. Just our beis medrash, the one downstairs. A few days, where the Rosh Hashivas will come. You can imagine a Rebbe coming all the way from Muncie, all the way from Queens, from Brooklyn, in this traffic, and there it's at 7:45 in the morning. If he comes, shouldn't I come? Shouldn't I come? I'm in the dorm. Chizuk HaYeshiva. Chizuk and learning. Chizuk HaYeshiva. Halachas Kamakamov is done in the Mir Yeshiva. Can be done in our Yeshiva. And that's not hypocritical. That's not hypocritical. That's not hypocritical. It brings out what we really are. If nothing else, the Patir of the Rosh Yeshiva will be a Aliyas Neshama. He has an Aliyas Neshama. A greater Aliyas Neshama. And all the yeshivas I mentioned tonight, there's a sifa. And all yeshivas in America and Eretz Yisrael, of course, for chizuk, and our learning, and our midas, and our saying hello, and our smiling. And what's wrong with putting it on the elevators? Smile today. Say good morning. It's babyish. It's babyish. It's a bazillion. Is it? Hopefully, with the chizik that we'll hear this evening, we'll go mile mile na vos Hashem, reach a higher madriga, aber dvorm sichem chizik tamid. Torah, tefillah, never miss the shachas, never miss the shachas. Gemilas chesed, and derech eretz. Schus of Rosh Yeshiva, and hopefully our yeshiva will have a chizik, we'll go mile mile na vos Hashem. Is the rebirth of the modest man.
I wanted to share some of my own personal experiences, including, as Rabbi Kohn mentioned, my wife and I being under the chuppah with him as our Masada Kedushin. My wife's dressed in nakib, wine spilled on, although our chasana was probably the most silent chasana in Eretz Yisrael in history, because all the people who had never seen the Rosh Hashiva Zatzal just saw him walking, and not walking, but being walked by somebody holding him as he was walking up wherever to be Masada Kedushin, and just seeing him shake and seeing how weak he was, and nevertheless being our Masada Kedushin, it was the thing that stood out most about my chasana that all the people remember. I want to start with my first introduction to the Rashiv, my Bechina. I was a second year Bachar in Keren V'Yavne, and towards the end of the year, and I decided I'm going to go to the Mir. And I sort of decided, like, that morning, maybe that afternoon, that I was going to do that. And I was told that I needed a Bechina. So I didn't really prepare. I didn't know what a Bechina was. I didn't prepare Shtekel Torah. I didn't think of chazing anything. But they said, I have to have a Bechina. So I went to the Shiva's office, to his house. And I said, okay, so tell me something that you're learning. So I'm not really sure what I'm learning. So I said, tell me a question, an answer, a chiddush, a thought. I didn't really have anything. I said something very, I remember what I said, I'm embarrassed to say. And it wasn't the question, it wasn't the tarets, it wasn't the shtickle. I'll just tell you that since World War II, the Mir's official policy is that because so much Torah was destroyed by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, any person that they feel has a desire to learn Torah is accepted into the Mir. So whatever Dvar Torah I might have said or didn't say, certainly not worthy to get in, but they saw that this little second year Beis Medrash guy wants to learn, so I was accepted into the yeshiva. I'll tell you two questions that I asked him in my time while I was there. I was trying to improve my kavana. I said in a very earnest way, Rosh Yeshiva, what are the kavanas that I should have during Kriya Shema? Shema Yisrael, I'm sure they're Kabbalah, Pinista, Pisa, whatever it is. What are Kavanas, he said. So he looked at me, and he smiled, and then he said, you should have Kavana, what the words mean. Second question, a few months later, it had been about 3, if not 4 weeks in a row, that every Friday night, I got a terrible, terrible, terrible splitting headache. And I was sure there was something that warranted getting a terrible headache the same exact time every Friday night. So after 3 or 4 weeks, I went to Rosh Yeshiva and I said, Rosh Yeshiva, maybe you could just help me understand what it is that I have to work on, what it is that I have to be misaking. And it's already the third or fourth week that I had a splitting headache exactly the same, whatever it was, about 8:30 Friday night. And he again looked at me, he smiled and says, maybe you need to get a little more sleep. So he was somebody who understood people, and I think that's what one of the things that enabled him to connect to people so well. There's one or two things I'm going to say that are not personal, but I did hear. Rashida had Parkinson's that he contracted. He got Parkinson's the year before he became the Rosh Yeshiva, and apparently there was a certain medication. There is a certain medication that can control the spasms of the painful spasms and the pain affiliated with Parkinson's disease. But it could have a potential effect, a questionable potential effect on memory. And the Rosh Yeshiva refused, again, this is what the rumor has, I don't know personally, but rumor has that the Rosh Yeshiva refused to take this medication because of that potential effect it could have on his ability to learn. And like Rekon mentioned, a few times, certainly at least once, if not twice, I went to speak to the Rosh Yeshiva in his house and he wasn't able to sit up, he had to lie down out of pain. I just want to try to illustrate, just so you could imagine in your mind's eye what Shir Kali looked like. The Rosh Yeshiva had a, let's say this is the Duchen in front of the Kodesh in the Mir. The Rosh Yeshiva had a Shtender just exactly like this. One in front of him, one on his right, and one on his left. The Rosh Yeshiva had, I don't remember if it was right foot or left foot, one foot was on the ground, and one foot was swinging back and forth without control because of the Parkinson's. One hand he was able to control, and the other hand also is swinging through with the spasms that he wasn't able to control. And it was like that for 20 years. And while he gave the Shir Klali, of course they helped him up onto the Duchen, he would take one foot, you can't see, but he'd take one foot, wrap it around his other foot so it wouldn't distract people who were listening to the Shir Klali, sort of interlock it and put the Shtender on top of it so that one foot wouldn't swing. He would take one arm, the arm that he had control of, and put it over his other arm, and this arm that had the spasms, he'd use that to do the fingers back and forth so people wouldn't be distracted from his learning. But we could only imagine the pain and that, not forget about focusing on giving a shir, just focusing on not shaking in a way that would distract people. people used to come to the Mir to hear Shir Klali. And it was very clear that they came not to hear the Shir, but to see him, and I could prove it. Because they didn't speak a word of Yiddish, and Shir Klali was in Yiddish. And they came anyway. And there were Rebbeim who brought their Shiurim in Eretz Yisrael to hear Shir Klali from the Rosh Yeshiva, knowing that every one of their Talmidim did not speak a word of Yiddish, just to see the Rosh Yeshiva and the Mesirus Nefesh. And I once heard from Matzio Solomon in Lakewood a very powerful idea. He said that we need Rebbeim in all different areas. We have Rebbeim in learning. He said, B'nai Yisrael needs a Rebbe in the Inyan of being Kone Torah B'Yisurim, of being Mekabli Yisurim Ba'ava. Rav Matzio said that Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel is B'nai Yisrael's Rebbe of this Inyan of Kabbalah Yisurim Ba'ava. And he quoted a beautiful Gra, and I checked it to confirm it is in the right place. The Gra on Mishle on Eish Eschayel, the first pasuk and almost the last pasuk. Eish Eschayel mi Yimsa says the Gra. What does Chayel mean? Ches Yud Lamed is 48. That's referring to the Memches Dvarim Shator Niknes Bahem. And Eish Eschayel, one of the pshatim that it's referring to is not just a person's wife, but it's talking to Torah about the beauty of Torah. Eish Eschayel, a person of Chayel of all the Memches Dvarim Yimsa. How can you find any individual who has all the memches dvarim shatar niknes b'hem? This person excels in this area. This person excels in this area. This person excels in this area. There's no pasuk. How could it be that one person has all memches dvarim, has all chayil? Answers the pasuk at the end of Eish Eschayil. Rabos banos asu chayil. Rabos banos. If you have a lot of people together, rabos banos, then asu chayil. You could have the 48. The accumulation of this Jew, with this Jew, with this Jew, with this Jew, if we all feel a sense of togetherness, if we all feel a sense of achrayus and interconnectivity one with another, then asu chayil, you can have memches dvarim. And that's what Matisyahu said about Rav Nosson Tzvi, that his yisurim, connected with my shmias ha'ozen, and your pilpul chaverim, and your other of the 45, of the 48 memches dvarim shetar nekneis b'hem, all together, that is what Klal Yisrael as a tzibur enables us to be Kona Torah. And of course, as Rabbi Kohn mentioned, all those Yisurim, and who knows the Yisurim that he suffered, Yom HaValayla, was always with a smile. And that's what I think every Talmud, every person who had a connection with him and a Shachas with our Shiva remembers that smile, that warmth, that smile. I want to talk about a very few, very simple, but indicative points of things that he instituted in the Mir Yeshiva that show who he was, how he looked at Torah, how he looked at B'nai Torah. Friday afternoon in the summer, Shabbos starts at around 8:30. That means the meal is around 9:30. And he wanted boys to learn Shabbos afternoon. You could play ball, but you could also time to learn. There's enough time for both. So every Friday afternoon, if you go to the Mir Yeshiva at the entranceway, you'll see big boxes of plums or peaches and big boxes of cookies just available for the boys who are learning Friday afternoon. There's something called Camp Mir. Anyone who is in Eretz Yisrael for the summer, you have Benazmanim. During Benazmanim, you want to see, you want to go up to the Golan, you want to go to the Negev, you want to see what's around. And if you're planning the trips yourself, you know that it takes a long time to figure out what to do, how to get there, which buses to take, where to rent a car. The Rosh Yeshiva had an idea. We'll give you 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds a camp. Like you're 9 years old. We'll take care of everything. You just have to learn morning seder and daven mincha with yeshiva. Learn morning seder 9 to 1. Mincha's at 1 or 1:30 at Mincha Gedola. And the afternoon, Mir Yeshiva has buses to take you to Luna Park and to take you to hikes and to take you to the beach and to take you anywhere else you want. And you'll be back in time for dinner in Maariv and Night Seder. Camp Mir. And it costs money. Of course, I'm sure the yeshiva lost money on it, but they got people to learn. And it was open not just to the Mir Bachrum, to anybody who would be willing to learn. And that's another thing. Even when I was in other yeshivas, whenever I wanted to come during Ben HaZmanim, we asked Rishus, could we eat here during the Ben HaZmanim? And the official policy was, you have to ask Rishus, but yes, if you're going to learn here morning Seder, you could eat the food, you could have whatever the yeshiva offers. The yeshiva was very much in favor of giving bechinos. You know, you sort of feel like, you know, YU is the only place that has bechinos for sure. That is not correct. I took bechinos my entire stay in the mirror every afternoon, so whether it was an amud a day, a blot a day, a blot, two blot, whatever chabura you were in, there were bechinas that were offered with cash incentives, like Rabbi Cohn had mentioned. And I'll tell you one ma'isa shaya. I think it might have been with a friend of mine, but I'm not sure. It might have been not a personal story. This I'm not sure about. The Rashiva towards the end of the Zman wanted to encourage the boys to stay till the end of the Zman. As happens in many yeshivas, there's a weakness. You know, once the summer comes, they're Americans, so we look at the summer starting June 27th, 28th, instead of, you know, Tisha B'Av or Yud Av. So the Rashiva gave a shmuz that he wants guys to stay till the end of the Zman, till Tisha B'Av. And after the shmuz, a fellow comes over to him and says, Rashiva, you know, I really want to. And then comes back the next day and says, Rashiva, I want to stay till Tisha B'Av. I just want you to know I actually called the travel agent to change my flight. But what can I do? The travel agent said that to change the flight will cost $300. The Rashiva looked at him, reached into his pocket, 100, 200, 300, change your flight. I think a little bit this idea of what it means to appreciate Torah on a Friday afternoon, to appreciate Torah during the summer, to appreciate Torah, a morning seder during vacation. I think these are lessons that we're not in the mirror, we're not in Meisharim, we're not in Beis Yisrael, we're not in Rechov HaMeilim, we don't have the environment that the Mir Yeshiva offers in Yerushalayim, a 12-minute walk from the Kotel. But the lessons that we could learn in terms of our own learning on Friday afternoons, on Motzei Shabbosim, on Sundays, on intercessions, on June Zmans, on summer, with our summer plans, these are all lessons that I think we very much could learn. I just want to finish with two more points, or three more points, which also could be very much nogeh for ourselves in our Batei Medrash. A few years ago, the Rosh Hashivas in Eretz Yisrael realized that what we in America have come to discover and call a media addiction, that cell phones were beginning to take away our concentration from learning. And there were many yeshivas that made a takana that you can't have a cell phone in yeshiva. And in a certain sense, it's a gzera she'ena of tzibur yachol amod ba. So the Rosh Yeshiva said, anyway, I'm making a takana, you're not allowed to have a cell phone in the yeshiva, cell phone on in the yeshiva. I don't remember if it's a cell phone or a cell phone on. But it didn't stop there. That week, we saw electrical repairmen running all over the building. We saw electric wires being installed throughout the building, every one of the floors, near the dormitories, near the Batei Medrash, near the dining room. And lo and behold, there's a brand new phone system, tens of thousands of dollars for a brand new phone system installed in the mirror. So that every single boy in the yeshiva has a private PIN number and will be able to access his own voice message box and make whatever calls he has to make and receive whatever he has to make without having a cell phone that's sitting on vibrate, of course, or silent, and taking away one-tenth of his brain for the entire seder, the entire day. It's easy to say you're not allowed to have a cell phone. It's a very different thing to say, I don't want you to have a cell phone, but don't worry, I'm going to make sure you'll be able to not miss the message and call your mother, call whoever you have to have and take care of your Shabbos plans, but not during Seder time, not taking away from your learning concentration. I remember hearing at least five times from him, and I think this is his favorite chazal, the beginning of Parshas Bechukosai, Bechukosai Teilechu, Rashi asks, if you say the Shmir Samitzos Omer, then what's Bechukosai Teilechu? Says Rashi Shetu Amelim Batorah. That was Rosh Hashiva's favorite chazal. That it's not about how much you learn, it's not about how much you know, certainly. It's about how hard you try, it's about how much you're Omel, it's about what you're investing, and of course, he's the paradigm of indicating what it means to work. I just remember one story, I just have it so vividly, I cannot share it. He came back from a trip to London raising money, and he had these Friday afternoon chaburas that he spoke in English in his house. They were a little lighter, a little more chilled out. And he said, I want to tell you where I was this week. I was raising money in London. And my driver took me, whoever met me at the airport, took me to a house, beautiful house in the suburbs of London. And as we approached the house, the driver told me, whispered to me as we were about to pull up, he said, this house costs $13 million. And he said, I didn't ask the driver if it was dollars or pounds. And I went in and I met the fellow. And then the rest of the next 5 minutes was telling us how much happier the other person that he visited, who was a Ben Torah, who was actively involved in learning, also a Baal Tzedakah, as a person, what more beautiful life that other person who was involved in learning was than the person with this beautiful 13 million something mansion, because of the person's not just being able to give tzedakah, but having an affinity to learning and a connection to learning. And I'll just finish with something that he said when we learned Yevamos. I learned Yevamos when I was in the Mir, and I remember the Rosh Hashiva speaking about Rabbi Kveger's Kasha. He didn't give a teretz to Rabbi Kveger's Kasha. Famous Rabbi Kveger's Kasha, I don't even remember, I haven't heard it in 10 years, but it's something about Tzaras Achoso. Somebody could probably help me. And the Rosh Hashiva just pointed out, could you imagine on that one Rabbi Kveger's question that was asked 200 years ago or so, how much ink has been spilled, how many shiurim have been said on one little Rabbi Kveger's Kasha? We could all ask our own Rabbi Kveger's Kasha. We could all do whatever it is that we do, and who knows the impact that it could have, who knows the eternal impact that it could have on Klal Yisrael, on ourselves, or on our own neshamas, on what it stands in store for our children, our grandchildren, one person, the koch of one person, the koch of our own Amelis Batara, what it could have for such a long-lasting time. And Be'ezat Hashem, we should all be able to take those messages of Amelis Batara, even when it's not easy, even when it's not the time that everyone else is learning, and try to push ourselves one little bit more b'zchuso.
I think the fact that I'm standing here speaking is an example of the Rosh Hashiva's godless. And let me explain what I mean, because Yaakov Feit wasn't Rosh Hashiva's well-known Talmud. I was just a guy in the mirror who enjoyed watching the Rosh Hashiva and hearing him speak. But I felt so close to him. I felt like I was such a close Talmud. When I was woken up a few weeks ago at 5:30 in the morning with the news that the Rosh Hashiva had passed away, I jumped out of bed and I went to hear the Levaya because I felt so close to him. How could I miss him? And I felt that I needed to share some things tonight. And that shows how great the Rosh Hashiva was, because everybody there felt that way. We all felt that way. We all felt like we were his closest Talmud. A few years ago, there was a fundraiser who called me up. They were starting a new campaign for the yeshiva, an alumni campaign. And, you know, he said, you should help out the yeshiva. It's very hard for him. So I made a pledge. And a few days later, I got in the mail a picture, a beautiful picture of the yeshiva. And it was from this fundraiser. And it was a small note on it. It said, Yaakov, I thought you'd appreciate this. I thought there was a smile on my face. I'm like, how did he know? How did he know that I was going to appreciate this so much? We all felt that way. He knew that somebody in the yeshiva, if you gave him a picture of the Rosh Hashiva, of course, that would bring a smile to his face. My first encounter with Rosh Hashiva, I was Shana Aleph, and I was maybe doing some shopping in Me'e Sharim, and a couple of older Bachrim, they came over to me, they said, you have to go hear Rav Nassim Zvi Finkel. I think the first time I didn't listen to them. A few weeks later, I decided, okay, and I went. And Reb Chaim Shalevitz is a famous shmooze about Osher HaChaim, where he asks, how come Bilam, you know, so he had a much, so he had a punishment, he was killed, and Eov had terrible Yisurim, L'chora, what Bilam did was much worse. But it seems as if Eov's punishment, the Yisurim that he went through, was much worse than what Bilam got. And the answer that Reb Chaim says is that no, because life is so precious. So even with Yisurim, so that life is so precious. And I just remember the Rosh Hashiva standing there shaking, barely able to control his body. He said, how could you not thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for life? We're so lucky to be alive. How could you not thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for allowing us to be alive? It's an amazing shtickle from Reb Chaim Shalevitz. But when you hear Rav Nosson Zvi say it, it was just so much more unbelievable. I remember my friend and I leaving that shmooze, blown away. And from that moment on, I was hooked. A few years later, I decided to go to the Mir Yeshiva. I think if I could summarize everything I'm going to talk about now, the greatness of the Rosh Yeshiva, I think, and what explains a lot of everything he did was his Avas HaTorah. I can't think of somebody who loved Torah more than the Rosh Yeshiva. It certainly explains his suffering, which we all know about. His way to deal with the suffering with a smile was because he loved Torah. He loved it. He went to the Mir on Simchas Torah. So in a lot of yeshivas, maybe all over, there's a minig that they sing Moshe Emes Visaraso Emes, and everyone starts jumping up and down for some reason, I don't know why. And they start jumping up and down as high as they can when they sing Moshe Emes Visaraso Emes. The Rosh Yeshiva did not really have the ability to jump. But if you watched him, he was just lifting his legs with any koach that he had. As everyone else was jumping as high as they could, the Rosh Yeshiva was jumping with us. Because he loved Torah. So we were considering, a couple of my friends, we were considering going to the Mir, and it was obviously not an easy decision. It wasn't something that everybody around here did, and our parents were not so happy about it originally. And there was somebody who had already gone the year before to the Mir, and he was trying to convince us to come. And he came to us and he said, you know, I spoke to the Rosh Yeshiva, and I told him there were a couple of guys in YU, they were interested in coming. I thought if the Rosh Yeshiva would agree to give them a weekly chabura just for the YU guys, so maybe that would help them come. So he told us that the Rosh Yeshiva said, no problem. So we said, wow, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva is doing a special thing for the YU guys. Okay, very nice. Maybe it was like a Kirov move for the Rosh Yeshiva. Okay. So I got to the Mir. It was my first day. And I remember waiting online to get a Bechina. And there was a guy standing next to me who I didn't know. And he said, oh, I need to speak to the Rosh Yeshiva because I have to find out if we're having our Chabura today. And I realized that the Rosh Yeshiva, if you just asked him to give you a Chabura, he would give you a Chabura. He gave chaburas to all the yeshivas, to all the groups of guys who said, well, the Rosh Yeshiva gives a chabura. He gave chaburas to everybody because he loved Torah. He would do anything. He would do anything for Torah. You asked him for a chabrusa, he would learn with you. You asked him for a chabura, you would have a chabura. So we had a YU chabura the entire year, once a week, maybe 30, 45 minutes every morning, once a week. I remember one time, we were at that chabura, and if you know what his apartment looks like, so at the dining room table, I guess to the right of it, there's a couch, and high above, there's one of those Israeli air conditioners. There's no window, it's in the wall. I'm not sure how it works exactly, but it was very hot in the room. The air conditioning wasn't on. We were waiting for the Rosh Yeshiva to come in, and the Rosh Yeshiva, you know, with his difficulty walking, walked into the room. He paused for a moment, looked up at the air conditioning, leaped onto the couch. He jumped onto the couch, turned on the air conditioning, jumped down, and began to give the shir. The morning of the Rosh Yeshiva's daughter's wedding, we weren't sure if there was going to be a chabura in his house. As the wedding preparations were taking place, there were flowers all over the place and everything. The Rosh Yeshiva, at 11 o'clock that morning, gave us chabura. And as Rabbi Orlian mentioned, if I could rephrase it a drop differently, but the yeshiva ran this way. This is how the yeshiva was run. Everything that happened in the yeshiva was because the yeshiva would do anything for Torah. The message that you got in Yeshivas Mir was, what can we do? Please just learn. We'll do anything for you. Please learn. You need snacks on Shabbos because you're learning Shabbos afternoon. There'll be snacks. We're going to give you money if you take bechinas. There, everyone who took bechinas and did fine on them, we got a stipend. There was, if you wrote a shtickle, you would get a reward. Anybody was accepted to the yeshiva. There were tissues galore because the air conditioning always worked. What can we do to make your learning better? We'll do it for you. Please just learn. That was the message that we felt. And that was because the Rosh Yeshiva wanted people to learn. He loved learning. He would do anything so that you would learn. The Rosh Yeshiva loved to share Torah. I remember hearing from the Rosh Yeshiva that if you don't share your Torah, it's selfish. How could you not tell someone? You have a chiddush and you keep it to yourself? How could you not share your chiddush with someone? It's not for you, it's for everybody. That was the Rosh Yeshiva's life, to spread Torah and to share it. I thought this was his favorite Dvar Torah, but maybe I'm wrong. The Or HaChaim says, I heard him say this, it's a beautiful Or HaChaim, but when you hear the Rosh Yeshiva say it, it's so much more beautiful. The Or HaChaim in Parshas Kisavo says, on V'samachta B'chol HaTov, so he says there, the Ein Tov El HaTorah, Shem Hayu Bnei Adam Argishim B'Mesikus V'Arevus Tov HaTorah, if people felt the sweetness of Torah, Hayu Mishtagim U'Mislatim Achareh, they would go crazy. Money would be worthless in their eyes. When you see the hear the Rosh Yeshiva, you saw him mishtagim umislatim about the Torah. You saw it in every shir kali. You saw it whenever he would say something about Torah. When you heard him saying the Or HaChaim, you saw the words of the Or HaChaim come alive. And his chashivas haTorah, his love for Torah. He also taught us how to respond to tragedy. I was there on 9/11 in the Mir Yeshiva, and I can tell you what 9/11 in the Mir Yeshiva was about. It was amazing. One of the most remarkable experiences of my life. But the day after 9/11, the Rosh Yeshiva spoke. And his message were the words of the Rambam in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Gimel, Halacha Yud Beis, about being Meimis Atzmo for Torah. And I remember the words of the Rosh Yeshiva reading the Rambam that Shlomo HaMelech had said, V'od amar af chachmasi amdali, and the drasha on the pasuk is chachma shalamadati ba'af hi amdali. The Torah that I learned ba'af in difficult times, when it was hard, when it was difficult, that was the Torah that lasted for me. The Rosh Yeshiva standing there shaking, telling us about how when you learn when things are difficult, so that's the Torah that lasts. That was his message for us after 9/11. The world is bizarre, it's difficult times that we're facing, learn. And then there were a lot of bombings that year. There was the bomb in Cafe Rimon that year. I remember hearing the bombs go off, and I remember a night of sirens, and I remember not being able to fall asleep. So there were sirens, and there was some attack where a bachur in the yeshiva was killed somewhere in the north. And then, towards the very end of the Zman, the last week of the Zman, my friends and I were actually at Rabbi Binyamin Zimmerman's Afrif in Beit Shemesh, and we got into the cab to go home. And he said, where are you going? I said, we're going to the mirror. I said, no. A bomb had just gone off literally half a block, right around the corner from the mirror sheet. Right around the corner. I believe about 10 people were killed. And there was a shmooze the next day, maybe the next 2 days, to that week. And the Rosh Yeshiva said, I'm going to say a shmooze in Yiddish, and I'm going to translate in Hebrew, because I have a taina. And when you have a taina on somebody, everybody has to understand. And so he went back and forth, Yiddish and then Hebrew, Yiddish and Hebrew, and he quoted the Gemara in Bava Basra, which we were learning on Daf Zayin Amud Beis, which said, on the pasuk, Ani choma v'shadai ki migdalos, Ani choma zu Torah, v'shadai ki migdalos elu talmidei chachamim. A choma was Torah, and a migdal was a talmid chacham. And Rashi writes that a talmid chacham ain't tzrichin choma. The talmid chacham doesn't need a choma, because the talmid chacham is already a migdal. The talmid chacham already has his Torah. So what does it mean, ani choma zu Torah? So said the Rosh Yeshiva, because the talmid chacham's Torah, it's not just to be shomer on the talmid chacham, but he creates a choma for everybody else. The Talmud Chacham's learning is what protects the rest of the world. And the Rosh Yeshiva said, do you believe this? What does it take for you to believe this? The bomb that went off on Ben Yehuda, was that enough? The bomb around the corner, was that enough? Do you believe this? The Rosh Yeshiva blamed us for not learning hard enough. And the Rosh Yeshiva said, there are 3 days left to the Zman. I want the base medrash to be full. Full, full. I remember it like it was yesterday. And I remember, after supper, running to the base medrash. We ran, because the Rosh Yeshiva felt it, and we felt it. I remember hearing a noise while I was in my dira, thinking that another bomb had gone off. And I was like, I have to go back to the base medrash. We felt it. We felt his words. These were the words that the Rosh Yeshiva gave me. Is Chashivas HaTorah. his love of Torah, and that Torah is what's keeping the world going. Torah is what's protecting the world. Those who witnessed the Rosh Hashiva had the opportunity to see true godless, a walking Musar Sefer whose avas haTorah and ability to be besimcha through suffering was unparalleled. He's seemingly irreplaceable. Yehi Zichro Baruch. My father, Rav Schechter, and Rabbi Miller, Rabbi Cohn, and everyone who's still here. I would say I feel bad that it's so late, but I really don't, because the Rosh Hashiva deserves every single, as late as this might be taking us. So it's an absolute true Kavod HaTorah that we're really gathering here and gaining tremendous chizuk from his life. I really, I can't believe I'm standing and saying over stories about Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel and saying Zatzal at the end. It's something I'm definitely not used to saying or hearing at the end of his name, as I'm sure many other people aren't either. But I'm just going to share a couple of stories. We've heard a lot throughout the night, a lot of Dibrei Chizuk, a lot of Dibrei Musar. I'm just going to share three stories that I was lucky enough to witness on my own. I saw it with my own two eyes. And really, I was not the type of person who used to hang out in the Rosh Hashiva's house a lot at all. I had a lot to do with him, and I was lucky that he knew my family. He was close with my grandfather. He very much respected my father, and he was always interested in talking about different things. That was my connection with him when I first came to the Mir, and that's what really took me a very long way in getting to know the Rosh Hashiva in the first place. But from the little time that I spent in his house or in his presence, I'm sure there are thousands of stories going around. I'm sure there are Talmidim who spent a ton of time with him, who were always at his side, who were always in his home, who have plenty to say. But I just think, as Yaakov said, that this is really a true testament to how unbelievable he was, that there is so much to say just from the short amount of time that a person would have spent in his house or would have had the opportunity to spend with him. And I just want to start as follows. The Rosh Hashiva, everything he said, which was so clear, it was so MS, it was so correct, it was so true, and that was so obvious. When you ever went to a Friday afternoon schmooze in his house, which was in English, it was geared to the Americans, it was made for Americans, it was just the most amazing thing that you came in, and I've never seen anything like this anywhere else. Can you imagine if there was a Mashgiach who just had nothing to say, and would get up and just read over some paragraph from a Musar Sefer that he picked up that day? I mean, like, who can get away with that? I don't know anyone. And I don't mean this at all in a Derech B'Zayin. I mean it as a absolute, most incredible attribute of the Rosh Hashiva, that every single week that anyone went to that Musar Shmuz on Friday, the Rosh Hashiva literally said nothing of his own. He got up and opened the Sichas Musar. Am I correct? He got up and opened the Sichas Musar. He would say, he would read the paragraph in the Sichas Musar, kimat, never adding his own things, you know, maybe applying it a little more to what was something current events, something that had just happened, something that was going on in yeshiva, something he was a little upset about or happy about or proud of, something like that, but literally, like, almost never adding anything to the simple paragraph, the simple text of what he saw in the Sichas Musar, and it just, every single person who was there walked out, like, transformed. It was the most incredible thing. That he was able to get away with it because what he said was so MS, what he said was so obvious that it was the truth, and it was something that a person could not walk away with and not be touched by in a very profound way. He was such a simple individual. As much as he was famous and as much as people always came to visit him, as much as people always wanted his time and wanted to speak with him, he treated himself like the simplest individual, like the simplest personality. It's something I was so not used to. I came from Neri Yisrael, and you know, the Rabbeim were much more hands-off there. That's just the style that it was, and I remember I came to the Mir, I just couldn't believe it, that the Rosh Yeshiva, who were so sought after, were just so interested in giving of their time, and so available all the time to just talk to anyone learning, to speak to anyone about anything. It was just the most incredible experience. And with that, I think he also did not acknowledge the fact
that he had Yisurim. Everyone said many different types of stories. I was personally in the Rosh Hashiva's house one Shabbos. My father said this over briefly when the day that the Rosh Hashiva was Nifter, but I remember taking Lavi Greenspan to the Rosh Hashiva's house for Shabbos. Now, for anyone that doesn't know Lavi, he's a very blunt personality. He's someone that is not afraid to say anything, obviously within reason, but, you know, he's extremely respectful of everyone, but he really is very open and comfortable. He's not afraid of Rabbanim and Rosh Hashiva. He's very warm and close with them. And I remember taking Lavi to the house. Now, the Rosh Hashiva has, I think, 10 children, if I'm not mistaken, at least 9 or 10, maybe more. But I remember the Rosh Hashiva, we came to his house, and walking through the streets of Yerushalayim with Lavi Greenspan, you end up coming very late to where you're supposed to be because everyone stops him on the street and has to tell him how much they miss him, how much they love him, how much they want to speak to him, how much they whatever. Anyway, we walked into Rosh Hashiva's house at least a half an hour late after we were supposed to be there. And we come in, and the whole room was silent. And I was able to see, Lavi Greenspan is blind, and I'm sitting there and looking at this entire huge dining room table that had like extensions coming off it in all sides, and the entire table is full of people, and I had no idea what was going on. I was just quiet. So Lavi keeps asking me, Shai, why is it so quiet? What's going on here? So the Rosh Hashiva was walking from his seat, which took him a while, to the door to come and give Lavi a warm hug and a kiss, as he used to give everybody when they came into his house. But he knew that Lavi couldn't see, and he wanted to walk him to his seat at the table. So we're waiting by the door, and Lavi keeps asking me, what's going on? What's happening? What's going on? And I was so embarrassed, but I just kept giving him commentary on what was going on. I'm like, everyone in the room staring at us. Everyone's wondering why we're a half hour late, and we're about to sit down. And the Rosh Hashiva's just coming to say good Shabbos to you. So the Rosh Hashiva came over, he gave him a big hug and a kiss, his hat fell off, and I remember I was just standing there, like, shaking. I couldn't believe the scene. And the Rosh Hashiva walked us to his seat, and he said, you know, I saved the two seats next to me for Shai and for Lavi to sit down next to us, and I just want you to know, Lavi, you're such a special person. I invited my entire family to come just for Kiddush so that everyone can get a little piece of you, so that everyone can see who my friends are. This is what he said to him. Like, you would do anything to make him feel like $1 million. It was the most incredible thing. And I remember we're sitting in the middle of the meal. That it doesn't end there. It was amazing. The whole meal was incredible, but one part that really sticks out in my mind was I remember sitting there, and in the middle of the meal, so the Rosh Hashiva says, Lavi, you know, you used to call me to talk and learning all the time. You used to ask me for Divrei Torah all the time, and you haven't called in so long. What's going on? You know, is everything okay? What's the story? So Lavi responds that, you know, every time I call on the phone and I hear the Rosh Hashiva shaking and he can't hold the phone to his ear and it's terrible and, you know, it's so difficult, I just feel so bad calling the Rosh Hashiva and asking him for a vart on the Parsha or a vart in the Gemara, whatever he's learning. I don't feel comfortable doing it anymore. So the Rosh Hashiva said, no, it's such a chizik for me, you don't understand. When I hear that someone who went blind later on in his life and still he's interested in learning and he's still interested in having a connection with Talmid Chachamim and Rosh Hashiva and keeping up with them, it's such a tremendous chizik. Like, please start calling me again. You know, you have to be mechazik me. It's such a chizik for me when I hear you calling on the phone. So he says, nah, what's the big deal for me? I'm just blind a little bit, you know, no big deal, so I can't see a sefer on my own, but I always have people read to me, I always have people tell me, Vertlach, what's the big deal? But whenever I hear the Rosh Hashiva, and you're shaking, and you can't sit still in a chair, that for me is amazing chizik, that you don't stop learning, and that you're always interested in being Marbit's Torah. He's like, it's a big chizik for me, you have to understand. So he says, no, it's not such a big deal, because, let me explain why. So the Rosh Hashiva responds, like in the middle of a Shabbos meal. So he says, let me explain why. You see, the yeshiva invested, they bought a chair for me that has very strong arms on the side, and it's, you know, very fit to the way I sit. And he said, so I sit there and I hold on to the chair, what's the big deal? So someone else opens the safer and then I'm fine. But for you, that you'll never be able to see again, it's like, it's tremendous, it's amazing. So like, they're fighting back and forth, who's yeshiva or worse? So I'm sitting there, it's like one of the times you just want to bury yourself in the ground. And I'm sitting there and, like, not believing this conversation. And the yeshiva turns to me. This is when I turned into a ghost. And he says, so Shai, Yavo Hashlishi V'Achriya Beneim. So, what do you say then? So I said, one thing I can say is, you're definitely, the two of you are definitely Mechayev, every single other person in the world. So he said, you know, you're 100% right. Like, that was his response. And I remember just thinking about this. I was so flustered to think about it at the time, but I remember after I left and I was just reviewing this in my head, I'm like, this was amazing. And he would sit there and make himself as if he was going through nothing, as if his whole life of Yisurim was absolutely no big deal for him, was something just so natural and so easy and so obvious that he can handle anything, just to make someone else feel like $1 million, anything to be mechazik somebody else. That was something he was so interested in and so careful to do all the time. I know that everyone always says that the Rosh Yeshiva was such a hero for his Yisurim. He was such a hero for building up the greatest yeshiva in the world. And he was so powerful. He had such an iron fist in yeshiva. He was on top of everything. He was involved with everyone. He remembered people's names. He was really interested and engaged in the Talmidim that came every single zman, even though they changed. I just really think, in my eyes, the reason why I see Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel as a tremendous hero was not for any of the above. Obviously, he was tremendous in that area, but in my eyes, he was a hero for, honestly, for his care and concern that he had for every single, not just every Talmud, for every single person that he ever met. It was just a tremendous, tremendous Ava that he had, a tremendous care and concern and love. It was just so palpable. It was so unbelievable. I remember when we had a baby last year. He just turned one this week. So I remember we had a baby on Friday night, and the bris was a Shabbos bris. So I called the Rosh Yeshiva on Thursday night, and I told him, I just want you to know we had a baby. So he said, oh, you know, Mazel Tov, that's so amazing. I can't tell you how happy I am. So I was like, okay, very nice. This is what he says all the time, I'm sure, on the phone when somebody calls. So he said, okay, so I'm sure, you know, you're learning in a kollel, you're a Ben Torah, so you're making a Shabbos bris. I'm sure you're going to say something at the bris. Maybe you can tell me over the Shtikl Torah that you're prepared. So I said, okay, do you have a few minutes? Yeah, of course I have a few minutes. What do you mean? It's my grandson's bris. Let me hear what you're going to say. So I said, okay. So I start telling him I prepared a whole shtickle Torah about Aseh D'Chalos Aseh with the Kotzitz Mila, the Baharis on the Mila. I prepared a whole shtickle Torah about Aseh D'Chalos Aseh. So he said, he listened to the whole thing and no comment the whole way through. And then in the end he says, you know, it's great that you prepared such a thing, but like, I really don't think it's the right place for it. I don't think you should say this over. So I said, why? So he said, is your marriage going well? I said, yeah, it's great. He said, is the baby healthy? I said, yeah. He said, and is your wife recuperating? I said, yes. So he said, so everything's wonderful. Are you learning well? I said, yeah. He's like, what are you learning this year? Everything's good? I said, yeah. So he said, how does a guy who has an opportunity to get up in public and say something, he's going to waste it on saying a shtikl Torah v'asei d'chalos aseh on Mila b'tzaras? He's like, that's not what you're supposed to be saying now. You're supposed to be Meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu in front of everyone, and I'll tell you exactly what you're supposed to say. He told me a vart from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, I remember it, that he said, scratch what you said, scratch what you prepared, I want you to say this over by the bris, because it's an opportunity for you to get up in public and actually thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all the wonderful things that he gives you. And he said, like, I want you to say over by the bris, and I did, that I told you to say this, and that this is the way a person who has so much going for him in his life should really get up every time in front of a tzibur, and he should be able to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu publicly for everything he's gotten from him. So in the end of the conversation, I remember he said, you know, Mazel Tov, and I'm sure Shabbos Bris is going to be a lot, it's going to be overwhelming. Just, can you tell me one thing? Sorry for asking, but what are they naming my grandson? So I really didn't understand what he said, but he's like, just tell me, I know it's Thursday, but I'm sure you discussed it. Just tell me, I don't want to wait till next week. Tell me what you're naming my grandson. So, like, I was really not particularly close with him so much more than many other Talmidim. And I am sure this kind of story happened with plenty of other people. But what it makes a Talmud feel like, and what it makes a person feel, when this is how much care he has for Stam a guy, Shai Schechter, who decides to call him up on a Thursday afternoon to let him know he's making a bris that Shabbos, it's something that's very, very powerful, and it's something that really stays with you forever. There's a Holocaust survivor that became a famous psychologist, Viktor Frankl. He made a lot of insights about survivors and how they went through the Holocaust and how they felt afterwards, how they felt before, how they felt during. He made one very famous comment, which was that he touched up what being a human being is. What's the definition of being a human being? So, I mean, I think it's very obvious, the two things that he said, but it's nice to hear it put in a very concise fashion. So he said, being a human being means, number one, to be conscious. Okay, obviously, if you're not conscious, you're not a human being because you're not alive. And number two, his aura was that being a human being means being responsible. This is something that stuck with me when I saw it originally, that these are his two characteristics of being a human being, being conscious and being responsible. So when I think of the Rosh Hashiva, I think of a superhuman being. Why? Because when you think of a person who not only realized that he has to be so responsible for himself, but the Rosh Hashiva was someone who was responsible and took responsibility for everybody else around him. Mamish, everybody else around him. As Rabbi Cohen said before, he took achrayas for any yeshiva he went to, and he felt that he could touch anybody or impress on them the importance of chashivas haTorah or any single dvar musar or dvar chizuk that he could give over, he was there. And to me, that's what made him a superhuman being. He cared so much about everyone else. He was responsible for everybody else. He didn't just worry about himself and his own yeshiva and his own fundraising. He worried about every single other person. He was like literally a superhuman being. I can say that one of the greatest decisions of my own life was only because of the Rosh Hashiva himself, and I do not exaggerate that at all. And I can tell you what happened was, to make a long story short, but basically what happened was the Rosh Hashiva, every time he would come to the Beis Medrash and daven, so when he would walk out or when he would be wheeled out, he would stop by every single bench on his way out, and you know, the guys would say goodnight to him or good morning or whatever it was, good Shabbos. And everyone just felt very, very good about that. So I used to sit three rows in front of him in yeshiva, the second seat over. And the first seat, which was right next to me, was Reb Nachman Lubavitz, who was the Rosh Hashiva's brother-in-law. They were very close. So I was lucky enough that every day the Rosh Hashiva used to stop by our bench for longer because his brother-in-law would tell him some nice vart he saw from this Baal Musar. He would tell him some nice vart he saw in the Gemara that they were learning that year. Or he would tell him some politics that's going on in the yeshiva fundraising or whatever it was. He would always fill him in on something that was going on. And he would always end up sticking by our bench a little longer. So I always had the schus of hanging around a little longer, and he would always, you know, bring everyone around into the conversation. So one Matzah Shabbos, he's walking out. He normally didn't daven there Matzah Shabbos, but he was giving a shmuz in yeshiva, so he davened there. And he's walking out, and he passed by our bench, and his brother-in-law said good tovach to him. So he said to me, Shai, can I speak to you for a minute? I said, yeah. He said, do you have a chavrusa tonight? I did, but I was like, no, why? So he says, can you come to my house? I want to speak to you. I have something I was thinking about. I want to speak to you. You know, you sure it's not a tircha for you? He's like, yeah, don't worry about it. He said, you sure? I said, yeah, don't worry. It's fine. I'll be right over. So he says, just give me a couple of minutes till I get home and settle down and make Abdullah and everything. Just give me some time. But then, you know, in a half an hour, 45 minutes, come to my house. I said, fine. So I came to his house and I walked in, and as usual, he gave, you know, his regular hug and a kiss, and he, you know, acted so excited as if, like, you know, the greatest person in the world had just walked in that he couldn't wait to see. He just saw me 20 minutes before. And I remember him starting the conversation, let me be makdim. I was never the type of person that would go to the Rosh Hashiva and ask him. You know, there are a lot of people who go and ask, Rosh Hashiva, I'm going to start dating soon. Like, what should I do? How should I do this? How should I do that? Like, it just wasn't me. I didn't used to ask those types of questions to him at all. I never asked him Mili De'Anla at all. All my conversations with him were pretty much in learning, or when I was privileged to be there with other people who were having conversations with him. I really did not speak to him about Mili De'Anla at all. So this came totally out of nowhere. He had read me a shidduch a few times, and I thought, like, here we go again. He's going to read another shidduch, and I'm not dating it, and I never knew what to say to him. Like, I'm not dating. He's like, why not? You know, whatever. So I was concerned that that's what this conversation was going to end up with. And I walked in and he said, you know, Shai, I've been thinking about this for a while, but, you know, I'm so jealous of the opportunities that you're going to have in your life that I'll never, ever have. I had no idea what he was talking about. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, you know, I parked myself here in the Mir Yeshiva many, many years ago. And he said, because I'm so busy with yeshiva and because I'm so involved in what we're doing here, he said, there are people in America that I'll never, ever in my life have a chance to be mashpia on. And he said, I'm so jealous that you'll go back to America one day and you'll be able to be mashpia on them, and I never will have that chance. It's something I'll never have. So, just before I continue the story, think about this. The Rosh Hashiva was a person who touched literally thousands upon thousands, probably hundreds of thousands of people on a yearly basis, on a daily basis, like just the amounts of Talmidim that he created that went all over the world that did things. And still he was bothered, like it means he thought about it at one point. It means he was bothered that there are people in America that he feels he's not going to touch. It was like, it's such an amazing thing. He's a person who was able to be mashpia on everyone that came across him, on anyone that ever wanted to. He didn't stop anyone from coming to his house. Anyone who ever wanted the opportunity to get to know him was mushpa and was able to come into his house. And still he felt bad. He said, I'm jealous of you that there are people that you're going to get to be mashpia on and teach Torah to, and I'm never going to get to them. So that to me was already something that was incredible. It was superhuman that he was seeing a responsibility onto others. And then he said to me, so I think what I want you to do is I want you to go to YU. So I said, you know, it's Purim time, and I was planning on leaving after Pesach, and all my friends were going to Lakewood. We had become very close in the Mir. And I said, well, Shiva, I wasn't really planning on going to YU, but all my friends are going to Lakewood, and my plan was to go along with them. So he said, what does that mean? What kind of balach rais are you? Don't you know when a person has responsibilities, you have to do whatever it takes to be responsible, to make sure you do what you have to do. I want you to go to YU. He said, that's the only way you're going to make it. And he said, you have to go for smicha in YU, because that's the only way you're going to become a rabbi in America. He said, I want you to go, and you should learn by your father, and you'll become a big Talmud Chacham. And I'm telling you, I think it's a very important thing. You have to go for smicha, you have to go to YU. You can't take the easy way out and go to Lakewood with everyone else. You can't just do that. A balach rais has to realize, step up to what you need to do, and realize what the plan is, and realize what you have to do in order to make your dream come true. So I said, okay. So then he continued to speak to me about different aspects of chinuch and his thoughts about chinuch and his ideas about when a mechanech should go into chinuch. And we had this entire conversation, and he gave me a big hug and a kiss before I left. He said, don't ever forget, when you leave, I'm always your father, I'm always here for you, I'm always here to follow up with you, I want to know. And every single time I went back to the Mir after I left, I visited a couple of times after I left the Mir, and I always obviously went to visit the Rosh Yeshiva when I came back. Every single time, without fail, he would ask me, before I said anything, how's it going in Yeshiva? What's doing in YU? What are they learning this month? I remember the first month we were learning Gittin, so he said, you're learning Shulchan Aruch Ebn Ezer? I said, no. So he said, I thought I told you to go for Smicha. Why are you not learning Ebn Ezer? Why aren't you learning Halacha? So I said, well, you know, the smicha program is 4 years, and some years you have to do Gemara, regular shir credits, and some years you have to do this and that. Remember, I was explaining to him the whole thing. And he said, oh, I'm just making sure, like, make sure you follow through, make sure you go for smicha, make sure, you know, you follow through with the plan. Like, you know, it's very important, you have to do it. Like, he cared so much. He took responsibility for other people's lives. He really pushed me to make a decision I will never, ever regret, a decision that I am so happy that I was told to make by him. And it was just such a powerful story. I just want to say one last story, if anyone permits me to. I know it's late, I'm sorry, but this was incredible. I was called when I was in the Mir by somebody who was very involved with a couple who could not have children for 15 years. And this couple was going through fertility treatments, and everybody knows fertility treatments are very, very, very expensive, and this couple could not handle it. So there's some organization that help sponsor, and they find families that are going to match up with these families that are having fertility issues. So they find a family that's wealthy that could sponsor this family who can't have children. So there was a family who was sponsoring for a couple of years. And after 15 years, this was a non-religious couple who couldn't have children. After 15 years, someone put this idea in their heads that they should go to Eretz Yisrael and get brachas from different rabbanim, and maybe that will, you know, help things or give them a schus, give them a bracha, whatever it is. Someone had convinced his family. So a very nice family who heard about this idea put up money that this couple who wasn't religious should go to Eretz Yisrael for a week. They should go to a hotel and they'll take care of them and go get brachas from Rabbanim and Eretz Yisrael. So they happened to know who I was. So they called me up and asked, you know, when this couple's there, they explain me the story. When it's there, can you make sure to bring them to Rav to get a brach? I'm thinking, like, who am I going to bring, this non-religious couple, totally secular, what am I going to do with them when they come to Eretz Yisrael? Who am I supposed to bring them to? They don't speak Hebrew, they don't speak Yiddish. Like, I wasn't sure what to do. So then I thought for a minute, I'm like, this is so obvious. Of course I'm going to bring them to the Rosh Yeshiva, and he'll know how to take care of them. So as the Hashkacha Pratis had it, somehow we ended up in, on Thursday, and they came in the middle of the week, on Thursday night, on Wednesday, I called the Rosh Yeshiva and I said, can I bring these people over Matzah Shabbos? He said, absolutely. What's the Shaila? I don't understand why you've been calling. Anyone who needs chizik, you know you can come to my house. Why do you need to make an appointment? I said, no, I just wanted to make sure you're going to be home. Well, you know, I have to make time for these people. Of course I'm going to be there. So I said, okay. So he gives me a time when we should come to see him on Matzah Shabbos. As the Hashkacha had it, we ended up going to a tremendous tzaddik in Meir Sharon on Thursday night. Someone set us up to go. He was a very famous Pesach, known to be a great tzaddik. I really don't know so much about him, and you'll understand why I'm leaving out his name. It's not important at all. But someone told us to go to him, that he knows a lot about fertility treatment, and he knows how to be mechazik people, so someone gave the idea I should bring this couple over to his house. So I went with the couple on a Thursday night, and there was a Rav who took us there to meet this tzaddik in Meir Sharon, who's no longer alive. And I remember we came there, and it was like mamish broken telephone. The tzaddik was talking in Yiddish, and the Rav who came with us was translating to me in English, because I don't know why I couldn't follow, and I was translating to them in English. And it was like a wonderful conversation, because it was like a half an hour long, and he kept asking them, did you go for this treatment, did you try this, did you try that, and how much did it cost, and which doctor did you use, and which hospital did you go to. He was like taking such interest in the whole story. It was incredible. So after this half hour conversation, finally this tzaddik asks the woman, she didn't understand, but he asks, so when was the last time you went to the mikvah? Now this couple is not religious, so the Rav, who was interpreting, says, no, Rebbe, you don't understand. They're not Shomrei Torah mitzvahs. You don't get it. So he says, what do you mean? How do they keep Taras HaMishpacha? What does that mean? Like, Nidah's Nisar Karis. I don't really understand. And he asks the question again, so when was the last time you went to the mikvah? So the Rav says again, like, whatever, I realize this is going to turn into something that's not wonderful. So the Rav says to him again, no, Rebbe, you really don't understand. They don't keep Shabbos, they don't keep Kashrus, like, they're not from at all. They don't go to the mikveh either. He says, I don't understand, it's Mamash Chiyuv Karis, it's Zunida, what does that mean? And he starts blowing off the handle, and he says, I don't understand, you want to know why you don't have children? Why should the Rebbe Shalom give a person a bracha to have children if he doesn't care about the mitzvahs, he doesn't care about Taras HaMishpacha, he doesn't care about Hilas Nida? And he, like, started going crazy. So I wasn't sure how I was going to translate this sentence. So I said, look, I'm never going to see this tzaddik again. I'll make a fool out of myself. So I said to them, listen, I have no idea what he's talking about. I don't understand Yiddish. I knew exactly what was going on, but I said, I don't understand the word. Let's get out of here. It seems to be having some attack. Like, I don't know what's going on. So we all walked out, and I left the Rav there to pick up the broken pieces. So this was Thursday night, and this was their first experience with a Rav in Eretz Yisrael, and I was dead embarrassed. I was so scared. How am I going to explain this to them? I said, I have no idea. He must be sick. I don't know what's going on. And I was hoping and praying that somehow Rav Nassim Tzvi on Matzah Shabbos would really come through with this family. And he did b'kif like kiflayim. So we show up to the Rosh Yeshiva's house, and I ask these people, please, you know, we're going to a big rabbi's house, please dress appropriately. And when I called the Rosh Yeshiva on the phone originally, I said, you know, I'm a little embarrassed. These people aren't from, I don't know what to tell you, but I can't vouch for how they're going to come dressed. He said, don't worry about it, it's not your problem. My wife's going to be home, and, you know, if need be, so she'll speak to her. Don't worry about it, it's not your problem. You don't have to be embarrassed about it. I said, fine. So we show up at the Rosh Yeshiva's house, and Mrs. Finkel was standing by the door. This is just to say a little bit about her godless. And this woman was not appropriately dressed. And we walked in, and Mrs. Finkel gave her the biggest hug and a kiss. We were standing in the foyer of the Rosh Yeshiva's house. I will never, ever forget this in my life. I remember Mrs. Finkel giving her such a warm hug and a kiss, and she says to her, you're such a beautiful Bas Yisrael. Do you know what it means to be a Bas Yisrael? Do you know how special you are? How many people in the world can say that they're a Bas Yisrael like you? And she says, I hear so much in America that there's so much intermarriage. So you guys are both Jewish? How lucky you are. What a tzaddik you are that you married a Jewish girl. How many people in America can say that they married Jews? This is incredible. And how many people in America could say that they came to Eretz Yisrael? What a schus And she says you should enjoy every minute, enjoy every second, just go everywhere and meet everybody and do everything you can and go up north and go down south and everything. She's like, this woman, like, thought we just met the rabbi. Like, she thought this was, like, the most incredible experience ever. And I remember Mrs. Finkel then said to her, so let me explain to you one little thing before we go in to meet the rabbi. She says, I live in this house with him, and I can tell you that I'm lucky that I live with someone who's almost an angel. The woman's looking at her like she doesn't understand. So she says, you'll understand when we go in, but let me tell you something. Sometimes, I have such respect for my husband, sometimes before I go in the room, I want him to realize that I don't just, you know, show up in the room to talk to him about something. Sometimes I put on something special to show him that, you know, I think twice before I come in. I do something special to show how much I respect him. So if you mind, just give me a minute. I'm going to go to the back of the house to get myself a special jacket that I wear to put on before I go in to see my husband and speak to him. So just give me a minute. Do you want me to get you one also? Because this is what I do. You know, just, do you want it? She says, yeah, of course. You know, you're getting dressed up, so yeah, I'll also. So I remember she came back with a something, a shawl or a jacket. I don't remember what it was. And she gave her a beautiful pin, a jewelry pin to put on. And she's like, look at you. You look so beautiful. Look how much, you know, the rabbi is going to appreciate that we get dressed up before we go into him. Look at this. You know, this is amazing. And I remember just watching this at the time, and I said, how many people would have sat there and said, how you tachin, you show up to the Rosh Hashiva's house like this, and Shai, how do you bring them like that, and what kind of business is this, and you didn't warn them before? And it was done with such a beauty, with such a ne'imus, with such a sensitivity. It was something that was so incredible, and it's obviously what that entire house was all about. It's something they lived, and it's something she continues to live on, obviously, and I'm assuming the whole family saw these lessons from that house. It was just such an unbelievably powerful experience, just that alone. So I remember we came into the Rosh Hashiva's house, and we sat down, and no one's talking. So this guy just can't get over that the Rosh Hashiva has Parkinson's. I forgot to tell him beforehand. And he just can't believe that he's sitting there, and he meets people, and he learns. Like, he just couldn't believe it. So he's stuck in his seat, couldn't say a word. And the Rosh Hashiva is just like, didn't start the conversation, so I thought it was a little bit awkward, so I began the conversation, and I said, I just want to explain to the Rosh Hashiva for a few minutes the background of this couple and tell them what the story is with them. So he said, Shai, can you please stop, just be quiet. He said, a couple that doesn't have children for 15 years, no one needs to say anything. Just leave it alone. He's like, I understand. Just be quiet. I said, fine. So I'm sitting there and listening to this conversation, and the Rosh Hashiva was talking to him about what it means to live with Yisurim and how difficult it must be for him. And I didn't think it was respectful for me to listen to this part of the conversation. I like tried to, you know, not pay attention. And then I remember, whatever, they were having a whole conversation. The Rosh Hashiva was asking him, you know, what community he lives in, what it's like, and how his neighbors treat him, and how do people look at him? Does he feel self-conscious? Does he feel people are staring at him all the time? All these questions he was asking him. And finally, the Rosh Hashiva says, okay, so, you know, I hope you, let me explain to you Karach HaTfila, and he tells him to write down his name. He says, you know, we're going to daven for you, and whatever, fine. So he says, is there anything else you want? So he says, Rabbi, just before you leave, is it okay if I ask one question? He says, yeah. So he says, I'm very uncomfortable, but just like, please don't mind. He says, yeah, don't worry, what's the problem? So he says, I just want you to know, Shai took us on Thursday night to a rabbi's house close by, and we were having such a nice conversation with him for a half an hour. He was being so understanding, and he cared so much for us. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the conversation, he just started screaming and yelling, and we have no idea what happened. And all of a sudden, we just left his house, and he said, Rabbi, I'm really, really nervous. He said this, like, in the most naive and beautiful way ever. And he said, I'm just concerned that if God never gave us children, maybe he'll never give us children now because a rabbi screamed at us and got angry. And I'm really, really scared. So he said, I just want to know what I should do because I'm so scared about what happened. So the yeshiva asked me in Yiddish, can you tell me what happened? So I said, like, very quickly, like, basically the yeshiva asked him about Taras and Mishpacha, and, you know, they're not from, so they don't keep anything, and he got upset. So he said, oh, okay. So he says to the guy, this is literally an on-the-spot answer. Unbelievable. Just, this is unbelievable. You know, he said to him, so let me tell you, he says, that Rav lives right down the block. He's like, I know him for many, many years. He's a big tzaddik. So he says, let me explain to you. You see, when I want to talk to God, so I go to shul, and we have such a thing. We daven three times a day. That's the way we talk to him. He said, I go to shul, and I talk just like everyone else does. You know, that's what it is. He said, some people are so holy and so close to God that they just speak to him like I'm speaking to you. So he said, this tzaddik down the block, I know him for many years. He's such a big tzaddik. He's one of those types of people. And when he hears a problem, when he hears someone that's having a tzara, so he'll just start yelling at God right in the middle of nowhere. Just when he hears it, he'll just start screaming at him as if he's right in front of him. I'm telling you, that's what happened. I know him very well. I'm telling you, he's a special person. I know that's what happened. You don't have to worry about it. It's not going to bother you. It's not going to hurt you. I'm telling you, that's exactly what happened. I know him. So the guy, like, burst out crying. He couldn't believe it. And the Rosh Yeshiva says, you see, like, there's nothing to worry about. I'm telling you. So he got up and he left. He gave him a bracha again. And on our way out, he taps me on the shoulder. He says, "Yivam esamachayim ebeiz, afdem shteitin chazal mutu l'shanas m'pnei hashol." So, I don't think we need much more than that to show how sensitive and caring the Rosh Yeshiva was to everybody, to the non-religious couple that he would never see again, that he had nothing to do with, that he concocted a whole story to make him feel like $1 million and have nothing to worry about, just to calm him down. To me, that was an incredible, incredible lesson. Just to end off, the Gemara says in Baba Basra, Ayin Hei Amid Aleph, that when Moshe Rabbeinu passed away, so the Gemara says a very strange story. Yehoshua ben Nun took over. He was the obvious next Gadol HaDor in line. So the Gemara says that Amru Zkenim Shabbos HaDor, Pnei Moshe K'pnei Achama, Pnei Yehoshua K'pnei Alevana. Moshe Rabbeinu was like the sun, and Yehoshua ben Nun is only like the moon. So they continue to say a very strange statement. So Rashi comments, what does it mean? Rashi says in Baba Basra that what it means is that we used to have Moshe Rabbeinu, who was such a chashuv tzaddik, and he was Pnei Moshe Pnei Achama, and now we're left with Nebuch, our generation is left with Yehoshua ben Nun. It's terrible. So the Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah says, what kind of business? How do they talk like that? Yeshua was the undisputed Gadol HaDor. He was the Talmud Muvak of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was sitting and setting up the benches all the time. He was the first and last one in yeshiva. He was asking all the questions, following Moshe Rabbeinu around. And the first day on the job, there's a Kenim Shabbalei Sa'adar, who are the Anshei Knesset Gadolah of that generation. They were the people who were the biggest tzaddikim of the time. Get up and they say, "Hi Nebuch, we're stuck with Yeshua ben Nun." Like, okay, he's nice, but like not as good as Moshe Rabbeinu. How could it be that they spoke like that about Moshe Rabbeinu's Talmud, Yehoshua ben Nun? It was obvious he was supposed to be the Gadol HaDor. So the Chafetz Chaim is very bothered by Rashi's pshat in the Gemara, and he says it's very hard for him to believe that that's what the Zekanim Shabbat Yisrael HaDor were actually saying. So the Chafetz Chaim writes a beautiful pshat. He says, no, of course you can never say that they were saying anything bad about Yehoshua ben Nun as opposed to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's impossible. Everyone knew that Yehoshua ben Nun was going to be the manager of Klal Yisrael and he was going to take over. He says, if you look carefully, the Gemara says that the Zekanim Shabbos HaDar said, "Oy lanu miyas habusha, oy lanu miyas hachlima." It's embarrassing to us. Yehoshua ben Nun was one of the Zekanim just like we were. Yehoshua ben Nun was one of us. He was one of the Shivim Zekanim. And he sat, and he was Misharis Moshe Rabbeinu, and he sat and he learned very seriously, and he took his time very seriously, and he did everything the way he was supposed to, and he rose to become the Gadol HaDor, and "Oy lanu miyas habusha." Look at us. We're stuck in the same place we were. We're the same Shivim Zekanim that we started as. We're the same Talmid Chacham that we started as. Okay, we're nice, but we're not close to as good as we could have been. Look at Yehoshua ben Nun; he was Ol L'Gedula, and Aylanu Miyas Habusha, Aylanu Miyas Achlima. Look at us; we're left in the dust, we're left in the sand. And Yehoshua ben Nun totally, totally went above and beyond any expectations that we ever had for ourselves. So when I think of the Rosh Yeshiva, this is as everyone has said all over the world. He was an American. He was someone that was Mizkenim Shabbos Adar. He was just like every single one of us. He was an ordinary individual. He was someone that really did not have anything more going for him than any other normal person has. And when we think about it and we see how he became the Yehoshua ben Nun, he was literally the undisputed the undisputed Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. I can't remember the last time there was a Levaya in my lifetime. I don't know, but I'm sure it happened before. When Rav Moshe Feinstein passed away, Rav Shlomo Zalman was like that. But really, when was the last time you remember such a thing, that Mikol Tfusas Haaretz, everyone came out to be maspidim, everyone came out to, my friends told me in the Mir Yeshiva that every single night there were haspedim from all over, all across the spectrum, everywhere. There were literally haspedim for an hour or two every single night in the Mir Yeshiva, and you see that there were haspedim in every yeshiva all across the world. Everyone was touched by him. He was undisputed that he became such a Talmud Chacham and such a tzaddik and such a master in everything he did. And that's really something that the Chafetz Chaim is pointing out to us, that it's Oilanu Miyosabusha. It's not that our generation is losing out, that we only have Yeshua. It's Oilanu, that it's something that we don't have the proper goals in mind like he had, and we don't have the proper sensitivity that to time like he had, that he took every single second of his time very seriously and very carefully. It was all used very carefully and allocated very carefully to exactly what he was going to do, what he was going to learn at that time. And that's what the Chafetz Chaim teaches us, that if a person actually applies himself, he can rise himself up to become one of the Yeshua ben Nuns of the generation, and not simply stick as one of the Shimon's Kenim. He could rise above and beyond anyone's expectations. I hope some of these were an aliyah for the Rosh Shiva's neshama, and tehei nafsho tzura b'tzorah chayim. Thank you.